This is the 5th of September 2006, and it is a recording of Graham Griffiths of 17 Glendale Rowlands Castle.
Name is Graham Griffiths. Date of birth is the 8th of June 1945. I now live at 17 Glendale Rowlands Castle with my wife Diane, as she's popularly known, although her correct first name is Claire, so it's Claire Diana is her full name. We have lived in Rowlands Castle now for about 28 years, arrived on the 17th of October 1978. The way we arrived here was we were living in the West Midlands, where I had a convenience store business which became too busy for us and we weren't spending much time together. I was working 6.5 days a week, whereby on the Sunday afternoon I'd fall fast asleep on the sofa, and as I said, at the end of the day this was not doing our marriage too good, so we decided to sell that business and look for a new life, which we did eventually, and I then moved into a sales representative for a canning company. People of long memories may remember a company called Lockwood's Foods from Norfolk. I worked for them for almost 2 years, but it was after only 3 months working with them that I decided I couldn't take that type of life and I started looking for another business. And the first thing that came to mind was a post office. So I spent 12 months trying to find the right one, scouring the south of Birmingham all the way down to Land's End, visiting many parts of the country, and eventually we had looked in what is known as the Businessman's Bible, which is the Dalton's Weekly, where you find all businesses for sale. And we looked under an agent, I think it was called Percy Collett of Waterlooville, and they had advertised a small post office in Rowlands Castle, and it sounded all the type of things that we had been looking for. And what we had been looking for, we had set out a list of our top 12 items, if you like, and it was a village, preferably with a green, nice living accommodation, schooling for the children, and one of the other items, my favourite, was it had to have a cricket club. Anyway, we saw the advert, we decided to take a look at it, came down to Rowlands Castle. However, one of the items that was difficult at the time, we wanted to come down on one particular day and we were put off for what reason I can't remember, but we asked if we could come on the Saturday and they said, well, you can go on the Saturday but you will only be able to view it at the very end of the day. And we said, well, why is that? And they said, well, there's a village fair on. So we said, okay, well, we'll go down and have a look, you know, and we can just have a look around before we see, you know, the premises. So we actually turned up at the beginning of July, back in 78. And on arriving in the village, it was quiet to begin with because we'd come down fairly early in the morning. And as the day wore on, we found more and more people gathering around the village green. And we'd never come across this before. And so we strolled around the village, we had a good look around, various places, quite liked the look of it. Eventually we got involved with the village fair, just walking around and enjoying the day. After the village fair had finished, we went and saw the owners of the property and then started to have a look around the premises. And we quite liked the house, etc. And then eventually we went out into the rear garden and we saw that, and before we'd even left the premises we both knew that this was the place that we wanted to live in the future. So we just nodded to one another without saying a word. We knew that this was the place and we agreed there and then to purchase what was number 22, the green. formerly known as Clarence Cottages. There were two cottages there, and they had been formed together, and that, as I say, then became eventually Rowlands Castle Post Office. The previous owners of the property, we're going back to pre-war, was a Mr. F, this is initials, F.O.B. Adams. And he was, I believe, quite a well-known postmaster who wrote a lot of the history within the village. He did a special RCA magazine to do with the Silver Jubilee. He was then followed by a Mr. Stoves and his wife, and I can't remember his first name. They were then followed by my predecessor, which was Mr. Jack Lilly and his wife. He was a market gardener prior to that. The other two were former, I believe, naval personnel. Then myself, and as I say, I came along in 78. So those were the previous occupiers of number 22 The Green. And 22 The Green then formed quite a sizable garden. It's, if you can imagine, the front of the property, just to the right of the front of the property looking face on, was a small driveway. To the right of that was then a detached concrete sectional garage with a carport and a fair size and beautiful lilac tree. And that stood on, that garage and carport stood on what used to be like an old wooden shack that was a sweet shop owned by a Mr. Overy. And that actually does, there's a photograph of that housed in the Castle Public House at this moment in time. And that was what always stood there. Now, if you look at that property from the front onwards, if you can imagine, it then funneled out at the back. So you had two shapes going out almost at sort of 45 degrees, and then coming back across it must have been 100 foot depth at the greatest. So it formed nearly a third of an acre to the rear of the property. And that was a huge garden, and that's why, again, we fell in love with the property, because we felt that this was absolutely ideal for us with two young children, two boys, where they would have plenty of room to play safely, etc. And that went with the village as well. As I say, we arrived on the it was either 16th or 17th, but this is always a debatable point with the post office as to when they started to employ me. We arrived on the 16th of October 78, and on that at that time I was 34, my wife was 33, we had two children, Simon, who's the eldest son, who was 8 at the time, Neil, the youngest son, was 3 at the time. And when we drove down, on our own. Our furniture followed us very shortly behind. And we had this huge removal van parked alongside the village green, which blocked most of the road, and started to unload. As I'm unloading from there, a voice came from behind and said, "Can I please welcome you to Rowlands Castle?" I couldn't believe this. Right, the voice came from behind and it was, "Can I welcome you to Rowlands Castle?" I turned around to find a gentleman there, and it was a man by the name of John Blake. He used to live up Bowes Hill, and my understanding was, I may have to be corrected on this, but he was a former Queen's messenger, and he was also a chief of police in Kenya. But he was a perfect gentleman. This chap I got to know better as time went on, and in fact later on in life
he actually became the cricket club chairman, as we will relate to, as I say, a little later. But this sort of welcome I'd not been used to, and this was fantastic. Anyway, we all inserted ourselves into the home at the end of that day. The following day was the first day of being employed by the post office. This was after, by the way, this was after a three-month period when you are checked out, all the contracts are signed, you have to attend interviews to make sure you're going to be okay, that you can do the job, etc., etc. However, as I say, when we were installed in the property, the first day arrived, and this post office in Rowlands Castle was what they call a mailwork post office, so we had a sorting office attached. And this was, if you like, just a small rear room to what was one of those old cottages, or was now presently number 22 The Green. No more than, I would say, about 12 feet square. And housed in there were four postmen. And if it was a busy day, some of the mail had to wait outside because we couldn't get the mail and the postman in there with the sorting frames. Everything was operated from a post office bike, so all deliveries were done by bicycle. The first morning, mail arrived at 5:30 in the morning. And this was my introduction to working for the post office. 5:30 in the morning, the new training was to take place. Someone came up from Haddon's sorting office, and they knew slightly more than I did when they came along. The training was half an hour on describing how I completed a green form. Then I was left to deal with the postman and the sorting office. That was my introduction. We managed to get through the first part of that day until 8:30, just prior to the office, the counter side of the business opening, when another training officer came along. A lady from Head Post Office Portsmouth came out, and she was due to stay with me for about 10 days to give me tuition on all the counter work. Now, there were no classroom trainings in those days. It was all on-the-job training. As a customer came in, you were taught what to do as you went along. It was tough, and I can tell you now that, and it's, I think, a fairly well-known fact that if you're an incoming postmaster, you reckon about 18 months before you are fairly confident of most transactions. However, as I say, things are changing greatly presently. That training carried on. There were some very highs and lows in the very early times, and most of the time was spent with your head down over a date stamp, banging date stamps on books. You never really had much chance to get to know the customers at that stage. You were just concentrating on the job in hand. This was, as I say, the first day. Now, on that first day, you have handover within the post office, whereby you have a team of auditors who come in to check that all the stock is there, all the cash is there from the previous postmaster. You then sign to take that over. If you can imagine, there are something like four auditors in the office. There's myself, my wife, there's the outgoing postmaster and his wife. So there's about eight people in the office. And my wife, it was getting on late in the afternoon, my wife decided that it was time to go and bath our youngest lad. So take him up to the bathroom, start bathing him up there and all the rest of it. So she then starts to dry him off, take him into the bedroom. And the next thing we know, we have a police car pulling up outside, wondering what on earth is going on. They come in and they want to know who we all are. And if you can imagine, there's a pile of money sat on a counter. There's all the stock sitting on the counter and all these people milling around with all this going on. And we have very little in the way of explanation as to why the police are there. Apparently what had happened, my son, unbeknown to us, had hit a panic button inside the property, and it had gone down to the police station silently and brought the police out. And we were all there with loads of money hanging around, making it look as if we were trying to make a quick getaway. This, again, was quite an introduction to our early days of being a postmaster. However, we settled in. The shop was not terribly large, L-shaped. A lot of it was a mishmash of bits of old furniture trying to display. I think most of the display was for old China horses. We had tons of old China horses. I think they must have bought a job lot from somewhere or other. Not very well displayed, etc. But, you know, we thought, well, we will be able to put this right as we go along. Sure enough, we did that later on down the road. It was very dated within the shop, and as I say, our early days were just a case of consolidating what was there. It came later when we decided to, you know, put our own mark on the business and the buildings ourselves. But before that, we had to do some of the structural work within the house. There was no central heating, so we decided to have that installed. And that again, we had it installed, and I can remember a local plumber coming in. His wife ultimately worked for me, but he's still a local plumber. He came in and put some inhibitor in this new system, and I managed to put a nail through a pipe as I was supposedly helping him correct or put the floorboards back down. Anyway, the central heating was installed. We had to have a new roof, etc. That was put on a little later on. The first winter we spent there, we spent intermittent times there. We'd left my mother back up in the West Midlands, who was partially infirm, and so we were returning back to the Midlands on a fortnightly basis to visit. And I can remember over one Christmas New Year period when it snowed really badly, and to get back into the village we came between Horndean and Rowland's Castle on the back road and along by Magpie Cottages, and the snow was way up the hedgerows, and we had a great difficulty in getting back through the road. We arrived back home, and a couple of days later we had some very heavy frosts, and my wife was in the upstairs bathroom, turned the tap on, and as she did, the water as it hit the sink cracked the sink open. It was that cold, and we just said, we can't live here any longer. We'd only been there a very short time. We said, well, we'll sell up and go. Well, I said we'd sell up and go. My wife said, no, we will sit here, we will give it time and see how things work out. 18 months, she said, we will give it, and sure enough, as time went on, the roots went down deeper, and there was never any talk again about leaving. Rowland's Castle became our home, and no regrets whatsoever in having moved here, or don't want to move away as of this moment in time. Okay. I've already mentioned the fact that my mother, we'd had to leave her behind in the West Midlands, and she was in a bungalow back in a town called Stourport-on-Severn. And we wanted to bring her down with us, but there just wasn't the facilities there. There were stairs, etc. And when we purchased the property, we had in the back of our minds the possibility of trying to build a bungalow in our back garden. So after we'd been here for a little while, we contacted the planning authority, East Hants District Council, and said to them, you know, we explained the situation about my mother and that we'd like to try and build a bungalow. So they said, well, you won't ever get a chance of building a bungalow in your rear garden because it's backland development, and it just won't happen. But why don't you get an architect to look at a house on the front? And we said, well, where do you mean? And they said, well, where your garage and carport is situated now just to the right of the number 22, the green, you may get a property on there. And I employed an architect to have a look at the possibility. He came up with a design, and it's the most unusual design because eventually we did get the planning approval. The front of the building is wider than the rear. If you get to look at the floor plan of this, the one side is a straight line, the other one goes in at an angle from a wide frontage to a narrower rear door. It is unusual. Once inside, you don't particularly notice it, but as I say, it's its own bit of unique design there. The planning approval was given. We had the property built, and we decided that we would let it out to pay for the upkeep of there, which happened over a number of years. During this time, we carried on building up the business, and building up the business consisted of the early paydays were made up of whatever, and it's the same these days effectively, whatever amount of business you transacted over a counter was what you were paid on. So the more business you managed to bring in over a counter, the more your pay increased. So the more stamps you sold, the more, in that day, national savings certificates you sold, more premium bonds, the more pension and allowances you transacted, then that determined what your salary was. We set about trying to encourage people to use the post office as much as they possibly could, and this started to pay dividends because in the pay negotiations of those days, and we're talking, you know, nearly 30 years ago now, if you had a reasonable increase in traffic, as they call it, this is movement of transactions over the counter, you were allowed to apply for a special interim visit of your pay, and you could do this on a 3-monthly basis. And we were doing some reasonable business, and about every 3 months we were applying for a special, as it was known. And over the years, those specials increased. We could see our salary going up and up and up. Okay, it wasn't in huge sums, but incrementally it was increasing at a reasonable amount. This encouraged us to do even more. We then started to alter the inside of the shop and change things around, try to improve the look of the inside. And this is also trying to contend with two young children and all the normal things that go along with a huge garden. We used to do it ourselves, and there was a huge vegetable patch, digging all that all the time. We continued to do that, and as I say, increased the amount of business. We changed the counters within there. We had to retain the old glass units, but we changed the counter underneath, and that was something that was actually built specifically for us by R.J. Winnicott's of Over the Green. They built the counter that went in there for what was the length of that period in there. We carried on that for quite a number of years, kept on going. Over that period of time, at the back of Winnicott's, there was a company, there was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Alan Cousins. He started building what they call a trailing log for yachts. And this was a piece of electronic equipment which he'd put together himself. He was an engineer. And he started selling these, and he or his wife would come in on odd occasions and send out a parcel via us to wherever it may be, and some of them were within the UK, a lot of them were going overseas, etc. And this started to build a business. And this kept on going until eventually we were putting out so much business. You have to understand that because we were a small post office, we used to use the railway station for sending our items, our postal items, whether it letters or packets. At the end of the day, the postman would pick up whatever we had, one of our postmen. They would come and pick up our items and take them up to the railway station at Rowlands Castle. That mail and packet bag would then be sent down on the train to Havant, where it would then be offloaded and taken into the sorting office for Havant for onward transmission later that evening. That was a laborious job, but at that time the postmen were coming in twice a day. They would come in first thing in the morning to do the mail deliveries. They would then come in the afternoon to make collections from boxes, and they would also then collect our mail and take it up to the railway station at the end of the day. So postmen were attending the office twice a day throughout that period. We got to the stage where the amount of business we were transacting through just this one company, with these the trailing logs and all sorts of electronic equipment by that stage for yachts, was quite large, and it became so much that the postman could no longer handle taking it up to the railway station. We did have at one time a large hand cart which they used to push up to the railway station. That became far too much for the postman. In the end, we managed to arrange for a van to start calling out and collecting our mail at the end of the day, because it became so much. These parcels used to be quite large. In fact, at the end, they were huge. They were all what they called overseas insured air parcels. A bit of a specialist job at the time, which were in sums of money, you could talk up to £100 a parcel, and they were, and it was huge business coming through our office at that time. And that, as I say, started us off on one of our large posters within the office. And at the time that we had taken over the office, we had two ladies working for us, a Mrs. Jo Theobald, who lived up College Close, and we had a Mrs. Beryl Hall. Beryl Hall, her husband, used to be the manager of a motor retailer over at Fareham, and he was his garage was also part of a motor group, and that motor group decided, well, he used to through his wife, he used to use us for making postings of advertising of, you know, whenever a car was, new car, style car was coming out and things like this. Over the years, that progressed to the motor group using us. And we were sending out items of mail, 5,000 or 6,000 letters at a time. And the reason for that was they used to bring them into our office, and we would stick the stamps on those items for them. This was part of the service we would give, and we would put the stamps on and send them out. They would obviously just pay us for that postage that they that had been used. This they preferred because there were two types of service available, which was franking, which just is a machine produced mark on the envelope, and that goes through the letter service, or you get a stamp. And what they always felt was that a postage stamp on an item had a better reception by the recipient, because if you get a automatic stamp on there, normally it is something to do with advertising. If you've got one with an ordinary stamp on, you don't expect it to be advertising. So they felt, whether they were right or wrong, I don't know, but they used that service, and it went on until virtually the time that I left the office. They've been a tremendous loyal customer to us over the years, and a lot of money has changed hands and service has gone through. The largest posting ever done was about 25,000 items, and that is a huge number of letters. Now, that didn't happen in one day, as you can well imagine. This was time, and I can remember getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, going into the office and start sticking stamps on until about 8 o'clock in the morning, then breaking off, having breakfast, and then later on going back in and starting the day's work. When the day's work was finished, you go home, have tea, and you go back in about half an hour later, and you'd start sticking stamps on again till about 9 o'clock at night to get through this posting within a certain period of time. So we had a two-way, they gave me their loyalty of the business, I gave them the loyalty of a service. And this is how we built the post office, as I say, the strength of it up over that time. Eventually, we got to the stage where we were a very, very busy office. Shortly, again after, I can't remember how long after, maybe 5 years after we came in, the very first offices within the Portsmouth area were awarded the motor vehicle licensing issuing facility. Rowlands Castle was one of them. There were three altogether. There was Rowlands Castle, Hayling Island, and Wickham. And those were based on geographical positioning. And so that then started us off on another element of business which was unique to just a selected few offices, and that then again increased the number of transactions that were going over the counter, increased the salary, increased the work put through the office, and it just kept getting busier and busier. Fortunately, this sort of business we managed to absorb with the same number of staff that we had. The staff were very, very good. We've had a small number of staff turnover over that time, I would say, compared to other offices. As I say, Beryl Hall was with us, I can't remember exactly how many, but nearly 20 years, I would have thought. Cherry Collins is another one who left us, or who left when I retired. She was made redundant at that time. She'd done something like 24 years. The very last one is Rosemary Martin. She'd only been with us for about 4 years, having come from Castle Stores over the road. And prior to that, Jo Theobald, as I mentioned earlier on, she had been with us for quite a number of years before taking on her own office in Old Buzzum, where she looked after that for some time. Again, the time has moved on and the office getting busier and busier. We always attended what they called the Postmaster's Show, which happened in October of each year, and it was 1 year that we decided to go to the show, and it was in Newtown near Wales. And whilst attending there, it was just, again I'll go back here, this was shortly after my father-in-law had died. He'd left us a small sum of money from his estate, because properties weren't worth the value that they are these days. And we said, what are we going to do with this sum of money? And we decided that we would try to improve the office. And not knowing quite how we were going to do this at this moment in time, we went to the Postmaster's Show. Arriving there, by this time I was quite heavily involved with the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters. I was then chairman of the local branch. I was on the Southeast Regional Council, possibly looking towards going on further and higher within the Federation. Other things would supersede that later on. But attending the show for postmasters, I managed to get hold of one of the leading lights in the post office there and said to him that, you know, I was considering doing something different with my post office and improving it, and wanted to, you know, try and update it as much as I could. But if I'm going to do that, what are the post office going to do for me? That was my question. And at that stage, he just looked at me and said, well, there's not much we can do. You know, we can't really do anything, because there was no input from the post office. They never paid for anything. The only things they provided were sort of new dies for your date stamps. If a set of scales broke down, then that was it. But, you know, capital equipment, that was down to you. So we visited the show, came away, never thought anything more of it. And then in the meantime, we decided that we would consider taking the post office out of its present location, which was number 22 The Green, and build an extension onto the new property that we had had built next door, which was the one we were going to build for my mother, and we were letting out, and we were going to extend the front of that property to house a new post office, up-to-date post office, and also increase the living accommodation at the first floor. We put some plans in for this. We'd mentioned this to our own local post office representatives, and they were quite interested in this. And within, I would say, a couple of months, we had a visit from what they call our retail managers, and they came along and said to us the one day, said to me the one day, "You spoke to Tim Thorpe," this was the gentleman in charge of the post office at that time, and said, "How could post office help you with yours?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, how would you feel about trialing an open plan office?" And I looked vacant. What was an open plan office? And they took the time to describe what it was, which was basically a post office with a counter but no glass in front. That security that they've always talked about to keep you away from bandit attack was to be removed. And of course, all the goosebumps came up on the back of my neck, thinking, my word, am I going to expose myself to all these people coming in wanting to grab the money off me? But as I say, they explained just what was involved, and they said, you know, we'll go away, leave you to consider what this would entail. But if you want, if you're interested, there is a scaled down version of this at Cosham office, and you can go and have a look at that. So I said, okay, that's what we will do. We'll go and have a look. So my wife and I decided to go down to Cosham, had a look, and we're very taken with what we saw. Basically, all we saw was a counter with a money machine behind it. But the thought of this new concept really excited us. So we came back, talked about it, and said we were willing to give it a go. However, what about the staff? They will have to be consulted, of course, because they're going to be put in the same situation as us, working behind a counter with no glass. So we had a meeting between ourselves and our staff, and eventually decided to go ahead with the open plan. They were quite happy as well. After we took them down to Cosham to see just how it operated, and they were taken with it again, the same. This was, at that time, Mrs. Beryl Hall and Mrs. Cherry Collins. The planning of this then took place, and it took weeks of planning, because, as we say, this was a trial open plan office, never before done anywhere a full office for open plan. It's not even a main office had been done in this way. This was the first ever sub office within the country. There was a little controversy within the federation that I operated within, because they weren't totally happy about going open plan because of exposing yourself to certain dangers. However, I was as happy as I could be to go down this route. We continued on trying to cross the T's, dot the I's with the post office on all the facilities that we would need. We wanted as much security as we possibly could. We needed what they call a fortress position where you could retire to if you needed to count large sums of money. We had alarm systems, cameras. We had remote alarms which we carried around with us, so a bit like a mobile phone these days. If you felt in any danger, you would just press a button and that would set the alarms off, etc. We spent weeks in preparing the office. We had totally new shelving put in. We had false ceilings. The planning authority were a bit concerned about the office itself and the ceilings, if you like, because of fire and acoustics going through to the flat above. So we had to look at these problems, solve those, overcame all of those, and eventually the open plan office came to fruition. And it was a really smart looking office, as I say, brand new, never seen before in the country, and it created a huge interest within the post office. It was featured nationally. This was on its advertising. In fact, there is one publication when they bring out the annual results of the post office, and it was featured in the annual results magazine, which is distributed throughout businesses and commerce throughout the country. And as I say, it drew a great deal of interest from all over the country. In fact, we had visitors from overseas to come and see it. We had, I was left some gifts by the Australian Post Office. They came out to see it. The New Zealand Post Office came to see it. We had the Dutch Post Office come out to see it. There were, as I say, it created huge interest throughout. It was the way that we were able to issue money with a machine called a TCD, Teller Cash Dispenser. Totally secure. We loaded it during the morning before we opened, when the office was secure, and we didn't open it until we closed. And so there was, as I say, the security was that machine, because there was no money out in the open. It was all housed in there, and any bandit could not attack that machine. And we couldn't get into it to give out large sums of money. It was really as safe as it could be. This we had obviously promoted throughout the village. It got promoted throughout the county. It was in the Mean Valley News, it was in the news. And on the day of opening, there was a fantastic turnout. The whole of the village seemed to be outside on the doorstep. Speeches were made by the leading lights in the post office, etc. And from there on in, the open plan office again increased the turnover in the office, and it just went from strength to strength. That office has always been admired by, I would say, virtually everyone that's come through the door, even to the day we closed. It was still a smart looking office, smart operation, and it has been increased throughout the country. Other offices have adopted that type of operation, not as many as would have been liked, I'm sure, but that's purely down to the cost of fitting out that type of office. The fitting out of the office, it was on a 50-50 basis in the end. I provided 50% of the costings, such as the shop fittings, the floor, the ceilings, and everything else that went within the retail side and some of the other items. Post office, their part was to put in the post office fittings, the machine that dispensed the money, etc., and this was to give it this trial. And I would say it was a complete success. It was, as far as I was concerned. But for another office to take that on was a huge sum of money, and they've got to, as I say, provide that themselves. And you, in recent years, unless you can see a huge increase in your salary, you're not going to go down that route. That was the post office getting up to the stage of open plan. In the meantime, we'll go back to the site itself of number 22. As I mentioned, the garden was a roundabout, and we've only used the front portion of the site, if you like, where it fronts onto the green. To the rear of that, between the two properties, number 20 and 22, is a driveway. And to the rear of that, then, is still a huge garden. And I've, over the years, thought to myself, what am I going to do with a huge garden as I get older? And by this time I'm starting to get a bit older. I can't remember precisely how old, but I'm thinking, how much longer can I keep servicing this garden? Huge lawns, digging the garden every year by hand for the vegetable plots, etc. I really, you know, can't keep this up for forever. So we said, should we look at, could we do some development round the back? And planning policies were changing slightly at that time. So we looked at the possibility of trying to build some flats to the rear of number 22, the green, which was adjacent to the Robin Hood car park. Now, we weren't too sure what size, you know, or whatever to go for. And my thoughts at that time were that what was missing from the village were was accommodation for older people, and there was absolutely nothing for the village, only the old cottages along the village green. Those were the, if you like, the smaller ones within the village. And so we decided to have a look